has lived in Wild Rose all her life. How did you happen to be born in the village, in the township of Rose?
My father was an emigrant from England and worked in Buffalo, New York for a time before coming to this land, what was called then the Indian land. And he settled first on a piece of land where the West Holden Church now stands. Later he moved from there to the present, to the homestead that he lived on the rest of his life, the farm that Alfred Jinks now owns, is that all right? And he was one of the early settlers of this locality. His brother John Etheridge came a short time after him and settled on the land adjoining his on the west. They lived in shanties, log shanties, until they built a better home. Well, I don't know, doesn't need to say anything about that. That's what they all did. Oh, and well, what should I say next?
They used oxen, I suppose.
Hmm?
They used oxen.
My father never had oxen.
He always had horses.
He always had horses. He never had oxen.
Well, how did he get to Berlin? And
they drove to Berlin. They did their shopping, but their grocery buying and shopping in Berlin. They took their wheat. Of course, the first year that they were here, they raised wheat to sell, and the proceeds from the sale of wheat kept them going until they could get more. They very soon got cows and chickens. And Berlin was their market for some time. Later, there was a town started in Wautoma, that was nearer. But for the first years, Berlin was their market. And they lived on what they could raise and what they could get from Berlin.
Berlin was quite a ways away.
25 miles to Berlin. Yes.
It must have been an all-day trip.
Yes. It was a two-day trip. They'd start in the morning, to take one day to go, and they'd stay all night at the hotel and come back the next day, as a rule. Then later, there was a town started, when the railroad came, when the Wisconsin Central Railroad came through the western part of the county, there was a town started at Plainfield. And that was their nearest town. That became their marketplace.
How soon did they start raising potatoes?
Oh, it was quite a while before they raised potatoes for market. Just raised enough for their own use. They raised their own food, whatever they had to eat. Corn and wheat and rye and barley. And potatoes enough to use, and vegetables. But they didn't raise potatoes for a good many years for the market. But later on, they came to be the big crop.
Can you describe what they had in the basement to eat for the winter? How the basement looked?
Well, it was full of potatoes and squash and pumpkins and canned fruit. As soon as they got able to can fruit, apples. As soon as they got grew up, of course, they had to grow trees to grow apples. They didn't have apples right away because there wasn't trees to grow them. But they did have many apples later.
How did they preserve their meat?
In brine. They preserved their meat in brine. Pork and beef and mutton sometimes. And they raised all they had to eat. It's very little they bought.
He had a blacksmith shop too, didn't he?
Oh yes, my father was a blacksmith, learned the blacksmith trade in England. And as soon as he could, after he located here, he built a small building for a blacksmith shop. and had it equipped for a blacksmith shop with a bellows and anvil and everything it needed. And he did the blacksmith work for the neighborhood for a good many years, shoeing horses and all the repair work of the machinery.
That little shop was right beside the road on his own farm,
yes.
Wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Where was the first school?
The first school, well, I'm going to say it was the one on the corner. The first school was built on the corner opposite the Chicago Northwestern Depot.
West of the depot?
West of the depot. And William Jeffers, who had been a teacher in York State, was the first teacher. Now, I don't know, but there was another teacher before him. I'm not sure. But he was the first teacher and a very good teacher, a very efficient teacher. He was the father of Mrs. William Henry Jinks and Mrs. Isaac Smith. And he taught the school for several terms. Then later they had other teachers. And
where was the next schoolhouse? I mean, how long did they use that one?
That was used for a good many years. And then they conceived the idea of having a better schoolhouse, a larger and better schoolhouse. So they built one in the village where, what house do you say, and who owns that house now?
Where? Hannah Etheridge?
No.
That isn't the one.
Oh, I think.
Hmm?
Sorry, Sam.
House owned by Hannah Etheridge?
Well,
he don't own it now. Who?
John Graydon owned.
John Graydon. Owned by John Graydon. That was the not the building that's there now, but there was a small schoolhouse, just a one-room schoolhouse there first. And then later on, they found the need of having more room, so they built a larger schoolhouse on the same ground. And that is the building that is used as a residence now, owned by John Graydon.
It's across the street, not far from the Methodist Church.
Yes.
That's the place.
Yeah. And, well, I don't know.
Did they have a schoolhouse there until they built the present school?
Yes, the schoolhouse was there until the schoolhouse was built now.
You taught in that schoolhouse, didn't you?
Hmm?
You taught there, didn't you?
Yes, I taught there. And did you want to mention any of the teachers? It was there?
Yes, I think that'd be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Who were the teachers?
Well, there was Carrie Evans. She was one of the teachers. Mary Hanawald. William Humphrey taught several terms. Dave Jones. And, I don't know. Well, Anna Hogan, I think, taught there, didn't she? No, I guess it was in the other school that she taught. But they were some of the old teachers. And as the town grew, they felt the need of a larger schoolhouse, so they built the present schoolhouse, a part of it. It's been added to since, of course. And I was going to say the early settlers were very religious people, and very early started holding services. They built the what was known as the standalone church, and they didn't affiliate with any organization, and so they called themselves standalones.
Now, where was that?
That was on the hill adjoining the Oak Hill Cemetery.
No, you mean the Pleasant...
Present Oak Hill Cemetery.
No, not Oak Hill. You mean
Mount Pleasant,
yes.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yes, Mount Pleasant Cemetery, adjoining Mount Pleasant Cemetery. And there were services held there for many years. And there came a time when the Methodist people from Wautoma had branch service up there. And for many years, the ministers came from Wautoma Sunday afternoon, and there was Sunday school and a church service there. And the Methodist Church of Wild Rose was formed there in that church. And then later, there came a time when the Christian church became interested in the neighborhood and formed an organization and built a church on the Four Corners, half a mile west of the Etheridge Hill. That church stood there and was occupied by different organizations for many years, but it was owned by the Christian church. And among the early ministers who preached there was Reverend Burnap and Reverend Hale and Reverend Deerstein and some of the Methodist ministers preached there at times. And there was a Methodist Sunday school held there in that church before the church in Wild Rose was built.
What kind of services did they have? Did they always have a minister, or did they?
No, there, many times when they didn't have a minister, people gave their testimony, made prayers, and gave their testimony, and had a long service. Sometimes very long.
Did they do a lot of singing?
Yes, they did quite a lot of singing. Some of the old settlers were good singers.
Your father was too, wasn't he?
Yes, he was a very good singer.
I remember hearing him sing when I was a little girl.
He had a wonderful voice. He had a wonderful voice.
Tell about the devotional service he had every morning before he went to work.
Well, it was customary with not all the families, I guess, but customary with most of the families to have family service before going to work in the morning after breakfast. A long chapter was read from the Bible, and a long prayer or two was made. And it got to be very irksome to those that had to listen.
I remember how sore my knees used to get.
Oh, dear.
Then he would sing. That's what I remember, his singing.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they said they could hear
him. He's a hired man sitting there on needles.
I think the service lasted at least an hour every morning, didn't it?
Oh, it lasted a long time. He kept the hired man sitting there waiting to get out.
Well, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know.
There were many things that you know.
Who were some of the old families that went to that church besides your folks?
Well, the Woodward families. The Woodward families and the Thomas families. And the Darling family, the Harts went to church there. Yeah. They went to both the churches, both of them. And Essages and, well, the people that, as they came to Wild Rose and settled, the Wild Rose people used to go up there to the church too. The Smarts and Knights and Fishers. And different families that lived in the village.
I wonder why it was organized there, out of the village. Or wasn't there any village here then?
Well, there wasn't any village, I guess, to start with, no.
Who were the neighbors that you had on the farm?
Well, the Dale family, they were very prominent in the church, too. And in school, of course, too, they were a large family, the Dale family. It was among the neighbors, and the Etheridges, the two Etheridge families, and the Roberts family were quite an early family. And then the Harrisons lived there, but Harrison never went to church. Horton was very religious.
Now, Horton was Mrs. Dale's father, wasn't
Mrs.
he?
Mrs. Dale's father. And there was for many years, the elder, that is Mr. Harton and Mr. Harrison were old Englishmen, stubborn old Englishmen, and they were at Swords Point for some reason, and they were always going to shoot each other, but they never did.
I remember Grandpa telling the story about their troubles, and he always called them Arison and Orton.
Yes.
Always sure. Dropped his H's in
sure,
everything that he
yeah.
said. How did the housekeeping differ then and differ from the housekeeping that we have now?
Well, I don't know if it differed. They didn't have the conveniences and the appliances to use that they do now, but they did their work in about the same way they do now, barring the fact that they didn't have household appliances and conveniences.
Well, didn't Grandma do a lot of knitting and weaving and spinning?
Yes, yes. My mother had a loom and wove carpets and blankets. They raised sheep and had the wool. There was a carding mill at what was called Willow Creek. Then that's on the way near Red Granite, and there was a carding mill there, and they made yarn out of wool, carded wool. And my mother used to do a good deal of spinning and weaving. And the women all didn't knit their own stockings.
And stockings for the family, I suppose.
Yes, knit their stockings for the family.
And then they quilted their own quilts?
Yes, they quilted their own quilts. Quilting used to have quilting bees, which were gala occasions. What?
Mittens.
Oh, yes, mittens. Yes, they owned mittens, too. But they used to knit what was called double mittens. I don't suppose we ever see any double mittens now. But they were knit with two threads and were heavy, thick and heavy.
Didn't they used to knit big scarves for the men to wear?
Yes.
What were they, long?
Long.
They wrap them around their heads or their necks or what?
Well, around their neck and their heads if they wanted to, I suppose. It was cold enough.
What groceries did they buy then?
Well, of course, they mostly had their own flour ground. The wheat ground for flour and cornmeal. Their own wheat, cornmeal, and rye, I suppose. But they had to buy sugar. And they, of course, made their own butter. They had to buy sugar and spices, and they mostly made their own lard, I suppose, when they butchered, made their own lard. But there weren't so many things that they did buy then.
Of course, there was no such thing as fresh lettuce and fruit and vegetables.
Oh, no. They raised their own vegetables.
Or canned goods, either, was it?
No, never bought any canned goods. No, never bought any canned goods.
Didn't Grandpa used to dry a lot of things?
Lots of apples and corn.
How did he do it?
Well, he used to put it out in the sun or string it on strings. Apples. Quarter them and quarter and quarter them and string them on strings and hang them up to dry. Apples. That was a good way of drying apples.
Corn?
The corn was spread and dried in the oven or out in the sun.
He had a big dryer later, didn't he? That
yeah,
had
father made a dryer.
Had shelves in it with a.
Had shelves, those were screen shelves.
And a stove underneath, or?
Stove underneath, yeah. Square stove.
Did he just dry for his own family or for the
yes.
neighborhood?
Mm-hmm.
They used to make maple syrup too, didn't they?
Yes, early in the life there, my father and brother set out a maple orchard that is still standing on the old farm. And they used to tap the trees and make maple syrup in the spring. The trees got large enough.
Outdoors?
No, we always made it on the house. We didn't make enough. We always made it in the house. We didn't have enough to have a pan outdoors. We only made them in the boiler. Mm-hmm. And of course they kept geese and ducks to get their own feathers.
Didn't they raise flax too?
Yes, there
for
is
their linen, linen cloth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
For to make their linen cloth.
Yes, my mother used to weave the linen cloth.
What did you make of it?
Well, I don't know. I remember there was that old big bed tape that I've got some pieces of it yet. You better have some of that cloth yet. Maybe you'd appreciate it sometime.
Maybe that was made of linen?
That was made of linen. That was hand-woven flat.
Did she make sheets out of linen?
No. No, they didn't make enough for that. But there was enough. She had a bed tape, straw tape. A straw tape made of a cloth that was woven flat.
I suppose the beds were all card beds.
Beds were card beds.
Do you remember anything about the life in the log cabin before they built their house?
Oh, no, I never knew that.
You were born after that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Didn't you have a tame deer there once upon a time?
Yes, they had a tame deer. Mm-hmm. Yes, they had a tame deer at one time. And it was a very mischievous animal, but they thought a great deal of it, and it jumped through several windows. And finally a man, a friend, saw it in the woods and shot it, thinking it was a wild deer. It was Oscar Wilde that shot it, and he felt terrible, thinking he'd shot the deer. And of course they were really glad to have it out of the way.
Glad and sorry too, probably.
Hmm?
Sorry too, probably.
Well, yes, but...
How many years did they have it?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I don't remember anything about it. It was before my day.
Did they find it when it was a little fawn?
Yes, they found it in the woods and brought it home. Brought it home and raised it.
Well, is there anything else you think of that we'd be interested in hearing today?
I don't think of anything else.
Well, thank you very much. I'm sure that we'll all enjoy this recording.
Well, I don't know.
The previous recording was made less than 1 month before the death of Mrs. Fanny Etheridge Pierce. And now today, her two nephews, Milford and Jesse, are here to continue the story of the family as it came from England to this country. Jesse, what can you remember about the things that Grandfather Etheridge told you about the early days in Washera County?
Well, I have made some little study of the thing remember some of the things that were told me. As I understand, Grandfather Etheridge came to Buffalo, sailed down the Great Lakes, and then came to Ripon, probably by railroad. And from there he walked out with George Barnes, a friend of his, to the place in where he took up a farm in the known now as the old Thornton place, located where the Norwegian church now stands in the town of Wautoma. He stayed there a short time, then moved to the present farm, which he purchased at Stevens Point, which was apparently the government purchase office. And for that 40 of land, he paid $50, a dollar and a quarter an acre. Well, Grandfather started in, and they built a little shack, as I understood, of slab wood or logs, probably about 15 rods south of where the present old house stands. At first they had only an open fire to cook over, and they baked their bread and cooked their meals over just an open fire. Grandfather said that they lived for 5 months on nothing but cornmeal and a few berries they could pick. After that, they became very hungry for some other variety in their diet, and they thought some butter would taste very good. So they started out and walked for several miles somewhere, found a farmer that had some cows and could give them a little butter. They brought that home, and that tasted very, very good. Well, still later on, they became hungry for meat, and they started out and walked again somewhere down around Wautoma, where they found a farmer that had killed a hog, salted it, and they bought a ham from him. Well, Grandfather said the salting process was not very good, and the ham was somewhat stinking and off flavor. But they took it home anyway, and they had a wonderful meals for a while, off from this ham. Well, then later on, they decided they'd have to shoot some game, and Grandfather bought his old rifle. The first thing after he got the old rifle, he wandered back into the bluff south of the present house, and he saw a deer in a little bit of a hollow there, and he shot the deer. Well, Grandfather was very excited over that, and he made out to holler pretty loudly, I guess, quite excited. The amazing thing to me is that a man that had never been raised with firearms had come out here, purchased a rifle, and was able to shoot accurately enough to hit his deer. Well, Grandfather became a very good marksman later on, because he told of how they used to shoot prairie chickens. They didn't shoot just one prairie chicken because of the waste of powder and ball, and that was expensive at that time. They would wait until they lined up two prairie chickens in line and shoot two prairie chickens with one shot. And he must have been become a very good shot to be able to do that. Well, then later on, he said after they got that old rifle, they lived very highly. Then later on, they found the need for a cow, and they purchased a cow, which I presume was of Jersey breeding pretty much. And cow from that, they had the milk, and they had made the butter from the cream. Well, one time my grandfather very nearly destroyed the old cow. He saw her down in the woods, and he thought it was a deer. He came to the house, got the rifle, and leaned over a log and was taking a very careful aim. And just then the cow made some movement somewhere, and he discovered it was the old cow. So he very nearly destroyed one great source of his subsistence. Well, now Grandfather went on from there. They were living pretty well then. And of course, the breaking up of the land, I am somewhat amazed or wonder at what happened. My aunt has stated that Grandfather never owned any oxen, and as you know, that oxen were the source of power for plowing and preparing land on practically all pioneer farms. But she said that he never had any oxen. Well, he must have hired some of the breaking teams in that, which they probably were available at that time, to come in and break up the land. Those old settlers, when they first came in, picked out land in which there were vacant places where there were not many trees for breaking up. And the old settlers, in searching for a place, there were three things that they were very important to them. One was water. Number two was wood. And number three was available hay, presumably, of course, from marshes. Well, how Grandfather got his land broke up, I don't know, but presumably from hiring ox teams to come in and break up the land. Then on sowing the wheat, I've heard him tell that their early wheat was dragged in with a brush, which they dragged by hand over or by foot over the land to drag in the wheat. Then later on, of course, came on the A drag, which they made themselves out of a couple of logs, and the teeth were made of wood. Later on, the A-drags, they made the teeth out of iron. But those first drags did very effective work in preparing the land. Of course, the wheat was sown by hand and then dragged in afterwards. Well, then later on, I understand that Grandfather bought the first team in the section anywhere, in the country anywhere. The names were Old Cub and Old Prince. And Grandfather purchased those at Berlin for $300, and he paid it in cash, all gold. Grandfather made all of his transactions in the early years in gold. From that he went on farming. I presume he got some livestock, cows, chickens, geese, because the geese provided the feathers to make their feather ticks and their pillows. And then he also had some sheep, from which they clipped off the wool, took it down to Neshkora to get it into a carding mill there that carded it off and made it into the raw yarn that grandmother spun into yarn, and then they had a loom that they wove the cloth. All of the cloth at that time was made from wool practically, and all of the clothes that my father wore up to the time he was 21 years of age was made on the farm. The yarn was spun and the cloth, and the yarn was woven into cloth and made into clothes right there on the farm. And I have seen some of these samples of the old weaving, very good cloths. Grandmother made blankets and cloths of all kinds. Some cloth was even made from flax. They raised flax, and we have samples of cloth that they made at that time. They even had very fine socks made out of flax, and as well as the woolen socks, it was knit out of the wool. Well, in farming, Grandfather went on. He owned the first reaping machine in the country, which was the, what was that? the old Esterly Reaper. As they have told me, I've seen the remains of the old Reaper on the old farm when I first came onto it. I've seen the remains. Well, it was quite a clumsy affair, but apparently did very good work. Father said that it made the nicest swath or the nicest clipping of the of grass or grain of any machine he'd ever seen since. Well, that old Esterly Reaper was used out in Grandfather's farm and all around the country. And they had to rake off the grain off from the table for then was bound by hand into bundles and then shocked up. Later on, Grandfather bought a McCormick Reaper, and he also had a McCormick mower, the very early McCormick mower. We used that all down to the times we were on the farm. Father was able to repair it up and keep it in good condition. It did good work. Then the first hay rake that Grandfather had, in the early days, the hay was raked up with plain rakes. Later on, later those hand rakes. Then later on, he had a wooden rake that was much on the order of the some of the rakes that they used out west. You just drag them along the ground. The teeth laid flat on the ground were made out of hickory, about an inch and a half square, and then when you got enough of a windrow picked up, you just lifted up a handle and the rake would tip right over and you'd go right on. They did very good work. Grandfather also later on bought a plain old dump rake, one of the steel rakes of the later times. Well, so Grandfather managed, and the early crops, of course, the main crop was wheat. Wheat was at that time a very good price. I haven't, if I went into my statistics to find out what they did get, but they must have been a very good price, especially during the Civil War and for some time after that. He must have had wheat to sell, and of course they raised their vegetables, and they probably had some milk and some eggs, possibly some meat that they sold. I wonder how they got all of that money together to buy those horses, to buy that Esterly Reaper, and to pay the taxes, which of course were very small. Well, they were close managers. There was not much money spent outside of the farm, excepting for some new improvements.
How did they fence their land?
Oh, they used the rails split out of trees, they were set up in what we call staggered rails, and laid up. Oh, they were about 10 rails high, I think, and those were all split out of wood. I would say those were about 12 foot long, those rails. An interesting thing is told about, I think it was Harrison, wasn't it?
Harrison,
that split rails, 4,600 rails for $50?
$40.
For $40.
$40.
Yeah. But the farm was fenced in those staggered rail fences, which were a very good fence for that day, even though it occupied a little extra land to set them up. Well, now the pasturing of the livestock. In the early days, there were no fences, and the cattle roamed it freely all over the territory, and they put a bell on the cow,
which we now have,
and sometimes they had to go a long ways, sometimes 3, 4, 5 miles to find their cows. And if it had happened to come on a kind of a rainy day, the cows wouldn't come home and they would have to hunt for the cows. Well, later on when the farm was fenced, of course, then they kept the cows in all right. The next would be the house that grandfather built. After he got through that shack, they found the need of a house, and they built a house back of where the present house stands, and that was made all of wood and hand worked on by a man by the name of Liz Dunham, which was apparently a pretty good carpenter. It was all of pine excepting the roof, and the boards were all planed out by hand for the casings and the trimmings and the cornice and the floor, all planed out by hand. And the roofing, the shingles, were made of cedar, split shingles, all split out of cedar, and then sort of shaved down to be where they would fit into the roof nicely. The old house was plastered downstairs and the sides of the upstairs. Well, it was a pretty well good house. The doors were all made by hand right there. And I don't know about the windows. Whether they purchased window frames or whether they were made there too. But it was quite a good old house. And later on, of course, grandfather built the present house that is on the farm.
I had in mind that first house was a log house.
That grandfather? No, I heard him say it was a slab.
It was.
I heard him say that. But I wouldn't.
Well, that must be true then.
Yeah.
Well, that's the third house up there now, I know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the second built house, we used that for a hog pen and chicken coop for a long time. That's the one that the deer jumped through quite a number of times and knocked all the windows out. And used to jump inside, he'd smell grandmother making pies, and he would jump through the window and grab a pie, eat a pie up, you know. He was very fond of sweet, you know, sweet stuff, you know. He was quite a deer, and he always carried a ribbon around him until he was shot, as they have already said, accidentally. Well, then they moved that back and they built the house that now still stands there. That still has a lot of all plain work. That was done by Dunham too. And the shingles on that roof was all split shingles. I remember as I was a kid, I helped tear that old roof, that roof off, which had stood on there for probably 4 years, and put on new shingles. Jerry Pierce and Jesse Etheridge and myself shingled that house, all new shingles. The one that the present house is on the old farm now.
Is that second house still standing as an outbuilding?
No, it's torn down.
Torn down.
Made into a hog pen, big hog pen. Of course, that burnt when they had the fire up on the farm a few years back with the Alfred Jinks fire.
When the barn burned.
That burned then,
yeah.
Too.
Oh, there's a story about those old logs for the old barn. Our grandfather hewed them out. That's good.
Let's hear that.
Yes.
Well, they hauled the logs from...
down Springwater
down
somewhere.
Down Springwater.
And now, here, we get a contradiction. He hauled those up with an ox team.
That's right.
Yeah, so she was wrong.
He hauled them with an ox team is right.
Yeah, and he would go down in Springwater, down here into good timber somewhere, about 7-8 miles, and he would cut out, he'd pick out his tree, cut it down, hew it out, and haul it home with an ox team the same day.
Oh, yes, and those, that frame barn was, the most of it is about 12 inches square, the timbers were.
Yeah, that was about 50 feet long, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, 48 feet long.
48, huh?
No.
And
32 wide.
And he would hew one of those in a day and bring it home. Late at night, of course, where he'd get home with teeth and ox steam. But he'd go down and get one of those timbers. Now, if you've got any idea what it meant to hew out, you know, take a log that'd make a timber like this here, you know, had to have a pretty good sized log. And you had to stand on that log and chip out all along, you know. Of course, you run a line, find out the line to chip to, and then he would chop out all of those chips.
With a big broad axe.
With a plain axe, and then finish it off with a broad axe to make it square, make square timber out of a big tree like that, you know. If you've got any idea how much chopping there was on that. But the grandfather was a master with an axe. He was good.
He must have been a very strong man, too.
Yeah, strong.
Or he couldn't have wielded an axe all day like that.
No. Oh, yeah.
He was quite an old blacksmith, too, you know. He never was as good a blacksmith as my father was, I don't think.
No, he never...
He wasn't as nice work, but he done good work, very good. But, you know, we was talking about Robert Williams, about him building a wagon box for him. Robert Williams came up, and I don't know where he lived. He lived off in Springwater somewhere, anyway, around his old farm.
He was from Wales, I suppose.
He was from Wales. And he couldn't talk a word English. And of course, grandfather couldn't understand a word he said. But he wanted a wagon box made. So he came up to grandfather's, and grandfather had that little shop. He done a lot of custom work. So to get together, they couldn't understand one another, and they talked and talked for a long time, trying to make grandfather understand what he wanted. Well, finally, Rob Williams is a pretty smart old man, so he got a stick and he started on the ground, got a nice smooth piece of ground, and he drawed out a wagon, you know, shape of a wagon, and then made a box and shaped out a box for it. Through that, grandfather learned that he wanted a wagon box made. Well, then, of course, grandpa wanted to know how long and how wide and all that. So Mr. Williams, he paced it off on the ground with his feet. That was so many feet, see? So many feet long and so wide. That's the way grandfather got on the way to build the wagon box for Mr. Williams, which grandfather always thought very much of. And I guess we all did think very much of the Williams family all the way through. They had lots of experiences that way. There were quite a lot of Welsh people came in at that time, and there wasn't any of them could talk English. And through that, they had to make signs and go on in order to let them understand what they wanted made. I've heard them say that Robert Williams carried a big brick and plow quarter, although I suppose it weighed anyway at least 50, 60 pounds from way up where he lived, where he was breaking down to grandfather's shop before daylight to have it sharpened so he'd get back and go to work at date and when he should start working.
Those men must have been made of iron.
Oh, they must have been. They were terrible tough. Grandpa was.
I wish that blacksmith shop was still standing, equipped as it used to be.
Oh, yes, I would give anything if I could just step back in that old shop. Jesse and I learned a lot of things in there. One thing about it, we was always free to go ahead in the shop anytime and do anything we wanted to do. And one thing that Dad always did impress on our minds was if we broke anything, we must put it right back where we took it from and never say nothing, it's all right. But if we took it and threw it away, then we should be pretty careful how he ever found out. Well, we've got a good tenant for it, that's all. But he was, we could go ahead and everything. And like, you know, Father, he, when he was young boy, to learn blacksmithing, well, he couldn't, coal was very high, you know, blacksmith coal. So Father had to build, get a big pile of timbers and stuff together and make a charcoal and burn his own charcoal. He used charcoal for fire. He just wanted to do something, and that's the only way he could. He had to use charcoal and not the coal that they bought for the, because he used to buy that in wintertime for the next year, you know. And he made big piles and covered it up and made his own charcoal. Father did, when he was nothing but a kid. Father was a pretty good blacksmith when he was nothing but a kid. Learned it mostly himself.
Yeah, when he was 17 years old, I guess. He started to do custom blacksmithing for farmers. Well, it turned about like this. Somebody came in, they'd broken a chain and they wanted it mended. And grandfather was away. And the fellow says to Father, maybe you could do it. Well, I guess he could. So he went out and mended the chain. That's how he started into doing custom work. Then grandfather let him go ahead and get whatever money he earned, I guess.
He was an expert workman. They made a lot of their own tools, didn't they?
Oh, all their tools. Practically all their tools. Shouldn't be a saw, such things as that.
What is the tool that you talked about that they used for preparing the flax for thread?
Well, they call it hetzeling. I don't know what they'd call that.
What did it look like? The tool?
Well, just a long stick of wood.
2.5 foot long.
Like a sword?
Well.
Sharp on both sides?
Yes, it's a sharp on both sides. It's about a 1/2 inch thick in the middle, then cut down the edge on both sides, and had a handle. I don't just made a handle made on it, you know, the shape of a handle to handle it with. Then they used to put the flax over a log or anything like that, and then they would pound the flax and get that outside fiber off. It took a long time to get that fiber off. Then they had long strings of thread like flax, you see, the thread. And that's the way they done that. Grandpa told me all about it, and I used to use that. We used that for when they raised sugar cane to strip the leaves off with. Many people just use a stick, but we always use that for strip the leaves off. You had to strip the leaves off the sugar cane and cut the top off and start the bottom, and then it was ready to go to the mill. And that's what we used to always use that. That's for stripping sugar cane.
I wonder where that is now.
I suppose somebody burned it up, probably. Or some kids got a hold of it and played with it or something. We never was allowed to play with more than just to look at it or something. It was always stood back in the old woodshed in the corner there. And we could look at anything you want to do and all that stuff, but we must be careful not break it or anything. Grandma always watched that. Because Grandpa, he was, what he had, he wanted, and he didn't want nobody else to destroy it. Although he was very good with us boys. And he had, I never forget, Grandfather, he was be out in the backfield. I was always with Grandfather more than any of the rest, because he wasn't able to get out in the field like the rest, and I was the youngest boy, you know, and well, I'd follow Grandpa around, had to follow him around, and do little things with him, hoe in the garden, and oh, do lots of work. But one thing I always never forget is we'd be out somewhere and you'd see a board off in the fence or something need fixed, and he'd say, Milford, run and get my hatchet. Run and get my hatchet. He never would say, go get my hatchet, or run. No matter whatever he wanted me to do, was run, do it. And, of course, I was just young enough and foolish enough that I would do that. And that old hatchet was a homemade hatchet that my son Eldred now has, and has it up. Well, he's got up. Sure, he's got up to Clintonville. It's in my drawer up to Clintonville. He never taken it away from there. And it has an old handle made out of an old piece of some kind of wood anyway, Grandpa raised around there. And he used to, in his later days, he chopped lots of bones, all green bones and stuff for the chickens. He would chop them on a block, you know, and chop them all up fine. Well, when you lived on the farm up there, you and Uncle Jerry and Aunt Fanny, he still done that thing. He had a block up there, maybe you don't remember it. But he would chop, save all the green bones, and he'd chop them up for the chicken with that hatchet. And he had it well wound around the handle. Oh, so the handle was quite big. I suppose on account of, you know, he had rheumatism in his hands, and it was much easier for him to handle that hatchet, which is a very choice article to all of us. We all thought a lot of that hatchet, but some way, Aunt Fanny give it to Eldridge, see? Well, she wanted to give him something.
I'm sure she wanted him to and have it.
I wanted to take it and sharpen it all up nice and fix it all up nice, put new handle in. No, he said, leave it where it is. He wouldn't think of it. Oh, there was so many things. I used to husk corn with Grandpa and cut corn with Grandpa. Jesse and Father worked together, and Grandpa and I worked together. Grandpa was a very fast corn husking man. He could husk corn. Then we had to go out in the field in the fall and husk the corn from the shock. And I would sit on one side to pull the shock over, and I sat on one side and Grandfather on the other. And he'd always say, come on, hurry up, Milford. They're getting ahead of us. He always wanted to keep ahead. And that was the same way with cutting corn and like that. He'd say, come on, Milford. Hurry up. They're getting ahead of us. And he would work, and he could. For an old crippled man, I don't think anybody could cut corn as fast as he could. Because he'd carry half a shock at once. He's so strong. But he's always, come on, Milford, hurry. It's always hurry to keep ahead of them others. And by golly, we done it too.
He was strong until the day of his death.
Oh, yes.
So I'm telling about the story of the contest he had with old Minon, wasn't it? You remember? They were
Him and Minon was cutting corn. And it's on a farm, 40 that Dewey Etheridge now owns. And, it's 40 rods across the field. So they got, Bunnan and him got to talking about who could cut corn the fastest. And so they took had a race. And they started out with 8 rows apiece to cut. Grandfather was on the inside, and Bunnan was on the outside of the field, you see. And they started across the field, and Bunnan, he thought he was quite smart, you know. So finally, he dropped one row and only had 7 rows, and Grandfather had 9 rows. Well, of course, Grandfather, he knew it right away, but then he worked all the harder. And of course, the time we got to the end of the field, Grandpa turned around and cut 2 shocks on Bynum's. After he'd cut 9 rows to his 7, showed what a man he was.
Well, he was a master at binding grain, too. Stories told that he could bind 3 bundles, have them in the air, the last one in the air before the first one dropped. That seems incredible, but he was a very fast binder and a very beautiful binder. His bundles would always stay together when he made a bundle, made a very nice bundle. He's also good with an axe. Did you tell him about the timber the making for the barn? You go ahead and tell that. You're telling it better than I am.
Oh, the timber's for the barn?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we did speak about that once, about him hewing. You spoke about that, about him hewing out the timbers and all that. And one time, we had a kind of a cyclone go down through there. I was quite an old, good-sized boy. Big boy I was at that time, probably 18 years old. Of course, them days why you was young when you was 18 years old, you know. And a bad storm came up and blowed the roof off on one side of the barn, thick and clean about the thing left down there. And I had to be in the barn, and so when it went off, I didn't see it go off, but I went into the barn to get some hay for the horses while they were resting, and I found the roof was off in the barn. So I still got the hay, but we had a big granary in there, and I got a big canvas we had and covered up the hay. It was raining then too, covered up the hay so that the water wouldn't run down the granary. Then I talked and walked up the house, and Grandpa was standing on the back porch. Well, I said to Grandpa, the roof blew off in the barn. He looked up. I guess not, he says. Well, I said, it did. And he says, no. Well, I said, go look. So he grabbed his old cane. He started hipping down there. He always walked pretty crooked, you know, hippie. Hipped down there, and he walked in. Oh, shaw, he says. I didn't see that.
That is his favorite expression, oh,
sure. Oh, sure, I didn't see that. But he didn't want to believe me at first, you know. I was so well pleased with him at the time. But that was quite a bad storm. I know I drove into the yard and pebbles and stones. I was back in the back field dragging or coloring, and that hit me on the... Hit me on the face, and oh, I thought it'd drive him right into me. Lucky that day, Father was downtown with the one team that went around through the barnyard. His team was up, and I took his stalls on the outside, and I got out and beat him.